Okay, so we created no PowerPoint because we saw people getting carried out needing resuscitation after the PowerPoint slide. So we figure we give you guys a reprieve.
And we want this panel to be interactive. We're three expert marketers up here, and we thought that you might as well come up and ask your marketing questions to us. When else do you get free marketing advice?
Yeah, for something called the interactive, there's not been much interactivity I've seen with a lot of the panels. So we're going to do this different. This may surprise some of you, but anytime you have a question, go hop on that mic over there, and we'll call you. And so if we're in the middle of talking, you got a question, we're going to take questions during the whole panel, not just at the end. So don't be afraid. Jump up there anytime.
So, are you guys there? Excited? Awake?
Are we excited? Is everybody caffeinated enough?
Who went out partying last night? No wonder you made our session.
Anybody still hungover? I know, yeah, okay.
All right, so there's really two ways to bring business clientele into your business. You can either go out and do all the sales and try to get drum up activity, network in various different places and things like that. And then there's the attraction method, which is what we're going to talk about today, which is where you kind of just sit back, set out your boundaries, and clients come to you. Now, we don't really just sit back and do nothing, but we're going to share five tips on how to really get this done. But first, I want to introduce my panel, and this is Steve Harper. And I met Steve about, 9 months ago?
Yeah.
And Steve has a really unique networking business. He has, instead of going up at a network event and saying, hey, what do you do? They come up and he has different questions that you can ask. So he says that sometimes he'll come up in the middle of a networking group and say, hey, what wouldn't you be doing if you weren't doing what you were doing today? So he's got a bunch of various different questions, and I'm not explaining this really well, but he can do a much better job. It's just a unique, novel approach, and he calls this rippling. It's like having a pond, throwing a rock into the pond, and then all these ripples kind of go out, and that spreads your word.
It's not a drinking event. We don't actually offer Ripple at the event, but you can't drink. It's actually an honor and a privilege to be here. I appreciated Jen inviting me to participate. I actually own a company called The Ripple Effect. Based that off a book that I created called The Ripple Effect, ironically. And the events she's talking about is essentially I have... I don't know if anybody else has issues with networking, but I can't stand traditional networking. The way that people approach people kind of, you know, with that heinous question, so what do you do? And they kind of lead with that dollar sign firmly affixed to their forehead. I find that if you can create some unique areas that you can find connection, or what I call connection points, the chances of more successful interaction are greatly enhanced. And so I utilize that throughout my practice. I actually focus on helping individuals that are looking to develop a stronger network, either personal or professional. I coach individuals in that capacity. I also work with organizations that are focused on deepening and strengthening the relationships that they have with their clients, prospects, and, of course, their employees. So I'm happy to be here.
And then this is my good friend, Carlin Haas. And I met Carlin... I just met him on the phone because I was looking for somebody else that followed Dan Kennedy's marketing advice, and I read his copy on his internet, and I thought, this man must follow somebody like Dan Kennedy. I think I'll pick up the phone and give him a call, and we just hit it off right off the bat, and we've been great friends ever since.
Yeah, I'm what they call a direct response marketer and copywriter. And if you don't know what direct response is, I'm going to be getting into that into the panel a little bit, so I'm not going to explain it all here. But what my company does now is we combine direct response marketing with Web 2.0 technology to help people promote their business, sell their products or services online. So without much further ado, let's get this. That's me.
Don't I get to introduce myself?
And I'm about to do it, okay?
Okay.
And this is Jen Blackert, a law of attraction coach, and I'm going to let her introduce herself, say what she does.
Yeah, so I work with small businesses and teach them how to build relationships on the internet. And that's my site up there. That's just one of them that I kind of try to get people into my funnel by giving them away some good stuff. But what I really do is teach people how to make money on the internet. I have built and sold a business on the internet within the last year. And this is really my second business. Turns out I'm really good at it, so I go off and teach sole entrepreneurs and consultants how to do it.
Who here are entrepreneurs? Anyone?
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Yay.
All right.
So this is going to be great. Lots of questions.
Yeah. Like I said, anybody who came in late, anybody, if you have a question, anytime during this panel discussion, hop up on the mic anytime. We're going to make this as interactive as we can.
And we do have 5 points that we're going to cover that we kind of got together and we wanted to come up with 6 points and have us each discuss 2. And then we decided, no, really, there's only 5 major points to attraction-based marketing.
Okay, so why don't you go and start, get it started.
So the first point that I wanted to cover, since I do combine both my businesses as law of attraction and marketing, the first point that I felt that we had to cover was universal attraction-based marketing. That if we set out an intention, then we go get it, basically, in life. That we don't just kind of puddle around in our marketing, but we actually focus on one direct idea or point to what we want to intend to accomplish. So the point that I'm trying to make, and my intention, is to get you all to, before you start any marketing program or plan, is to, what do you want to accomplish? How many clients do you want to attract? What is the purpose of this marketing strategy or this marketing plan?
Go ahead.
Well, when we were talking about law of attraction, it is important to know what you want. If you don't know what you want, it's really hard to go after and go get something. So as we were talking just backstage, I was talking about somebody I consider to be a major innovator in marketing. I mean, this is somebody I think most marketers know who this is, and somebody I think is one of my marketing mentors, and that's Paris Hilton. Paris Hilton is, if you think about Paris Hilton, and people have certain opinions of her, but one thing I notice that Paris Hilton does, next time you see her in an interview, listen to her for a second. This woman never promotes herself. She's always dropping the name of the clothes she wears, the club she goes to, the booze she drinks. Even when she was getting a DWI, she was mentioning, oh, I was in my car heading to such and such a burger joint while I was drinking such and such a something. She can't help herself. And if you notice that the less she promotes herself, the more attention she gets, the more people are drawn to her. And this is when people talk about Web 2.0, this whole new technology, and that's what's happening today in marketing, is you're seeing people, by promoting others that are in, you know, similar services, similar industries as you, you're now reaping the rewards of that. And I think you're seeing a real shift from people trying to promote themselves so much to promoting others and then getting that back in themselves.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot with blogs, using Dig, Technorati, and things like that. By digging other people's stuff, you get link backs, you get traffic, so.
Yeah, and if you'll notice, the most popular blogs out there, they're often promoting someone else's product or service, then they may be getting affiliate links back to that. But they are no doubt promoting, not just self-promoting, but promoting other people's products. And by doing that, you build community and other people will start promoting you because you'll be more likable.
Absolutely.
Which kind of brings us to our next point, unless you have a comment.
No, go ahead. You guys covered it. Go ahead.
I didn't actually come up with this term, but there's a term, it's called Tarket, T-A-R-K-E-T. And what it means is identifying your one person that you are trying to attract into your business. So when we started, I talked about intention. So Volvo they actually have one person or one profile that they try to attract, which is a 32-year-old mother of two, and that mother has different activities that she does in her life. She takes her children to ballet and gymnastics, and they built this car around this one model because this is the model that's going to be buying their car. So in building a target, I tell my clients, choose the one person that you want to market your business to, that person that will want to pay you more than your fee, that person that will want to do generous things, offer testimonials, that they will just be your biggest fan. And later we're going to talk about what we can do with that fan. But that's the basic gist of what a tar kit is. So when we go back to the first, number one, law of attraction, well, who do you want? Who do you want to work with? And why not work with just those kind of people?
Yeah, I think a lot of marketers take a tendency to go after kind of a shotgun approach. They focus their time and attention on, you know, I talked to somebody yesterday at one of the panels, and I was like, who's your customer? And he was like, well, everybody's a customer. Everybody's a prospect. And I think what Jen's really, the point is really relevant in terms of the law of attraction and certainly getting specific in terms of who you want to focus on, because I think you've got to know who your market is. You've got to put time and effort, and the shotgun approach just doesn't work. And in talking with this individual, it was pretty obvious that, you know, he was spraying this out and hoping that he would get a lot of customers, and he was being ineffective because he really didn't know where his business was headed because he hadn't sat down to understand who his target is.
Or even just target market. I mean, yeah. You've all heard about target market. But why are we trying to go out and get everyone where really we only need to find, for me, I only need to find 20 customers that's going to pay me $10,000, $100,000.
Yeah, actually, one of the things when I work with clients and I ask them, the first question I ask them is I say, who's your target market? 99% of the time, I get a blank stare from their face, and they say, either they'll say, everybody, or they'll say, geez, I don't know. And one of the bad things is if you don't know who your target is, if you don't know who you're targeting, if you don't know their demographic profile, even how they use technology. And one example I give is that I was working with a client that was selling a, what do you call those, you know, those life alert kind of things, you know, when... You know,
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah, exactly. I fall and I can't get up. And
we needed that last night.
Yeah, we did. We did, yeah. But he wanted an internet marketing strategy for this. And I said, well, who's your target market? And he finally, after much cajoling, he said, well, looking people, you know, 60, 70, about that age. And I said, geez, how many of those people do you think use the internet on a regular basis? And he said, gee, I don't know. But they don't. So he was sitting there spending all this money on an internet marketing campaign and had no clue why it wasn't getting results because he didn't even bother to see who his target was and what their psychological hot buttons were, what they really wanted. They didn't even use the internet. He changed to direct mail. He started getting results. So not knowing your target market can cost you a lot of money that you could be using in other places.
So I've got a question for my esteemed colleagues. How do you recommend when you consult with clients to go define your target market?
I ask, if somebody calls me on the phone, I ask them directly, well, who are they and who do they work for? Or, you know, I just ask them straight up, you know, tell me about your business. And if they're not a right fit for me, I know right away. I can usually even feel if they're not the right person for me. To work with me because they have to, A, you know, really feel that life follows your thoughts and really be more than just a, you know, just make this business work for me kind of person.
Yeah, and if they're not really a good fit for you, even if you do acquire them as a client, they're going to be, typically, they're going to be complaining clients. They'll be refunds. If they buy something from you, they'll want refunds. So when people ask, when I work with people and they say they don't know their target, I actually have like a 26 question questionnaire I make them fill out.
It's brutal.
It is. He's done it. He's done it.
And
you have to know everything. You have to know what they think, do they use computers, and what they believe. So you have to be able to find that right fit, or else even if you do acquire them as a client, they're not going to be the best ones. And we're looking for ideal clients, not for just any old client, because as you know, when you don't have an ideal client, you'll be using 80% of your energy dealing with those people, and you should be dealing with the people who are actually good customers who will buy more from you in the future and be a customer for life, rather than dealing with the people that you're trying to beg to please not do a refund.
Don't you kind of find that usually when you don't have that game plan, you kind of take anybody and everybody? So the thing that you and I've talked about is if you aim low, you get low. You aim high, you get high. You have to understand who your target is in order to, focus on that. So who's going to make you money? Who's going to, essentially be, where you need to invest your time and your resources? Because I see a lot of clients that I work with, they spend all their time chasing business because they have no defined parameters. And if you can go after that, your efforts are so much more rewarded.
Yeah, I've got one more comment about that, is if you work with people, especially us entrepreneurs, if you work with people that are always dragging you down, then you're going to have no energy in life. And why don't you just choose to work with the people that bring you up? That's actually more attractive, that when you put these boundaries in place, people want to come to you. They want to be liked by you. They want to be liked by me.
No, they don't care if I like them. As long as I get them results, that's all they care about. But
so obviously that probably one of the next areas that you have to focus your target is your messaging. So how do you address that? What's your next point?
Well, I actually want to talk a lot about, once you've identified who you want, you have to craft a message that hits on all the psychological hot buttons of that market. We call it a message to market match. Your message has to be like writing to the one target that she just mentioned. You're writing directly to them, and when they read it, they could be nodding their heads saying, yes, that's me, exactly, that's what I want. And this is where I'll talk about what I do is a direct response copywriter, and a copywriter is someone who writes advertisements for some people, not copywriting as in books or something like that. What direct response marketing is it has what we call a call to action. So if you have your website, you have your company website, I'm going to say 90% of the websites I look at suck. I mean, there's no other way around it. It basically all says...
I'm taking mine off there.
Yeah. Oh, no, yours is great, Steve. Oh, no. Well, what I mean by that is we usually would see is, welcome to X company. We are a solutions-based company that offers solutions to problems where our solutions are great solutions to those problems. And basically, it becomes all about how great that company is, and I hate to tell everybody this, nobody gives a crap about how great your company is. What they want to know is, what's in it for me? How does what you do benefit me? How does what you do make my life easier? How does it make me money? Or how does it solve the problem that I have? And that's what the message you want to craft. And what direct response is that it has a call to action. And here's the thing. If you don't tell people what to do, they won't do anything. You have to tell people what to do. Call me. Sign up for our forum. I don't know what kind of business everybody here has. Even the B2B people, you have to tell people what you want them to do so they can do it. And the analogy I like to make of this is, with a lot of marketing, I see it as like a party. When you see a party out there, there could be lots of buzz, lots of hype, and everyone's really excited about this party. And that's what a lot of people do in terms of branding or publicity. They want to get people talking about what they do. And that's really, really great. So everyone's excited. But for this party, you forgot to mail out the invitations. So nobody showed up. And they say, well, why didn't anybody show up? They were talking about it. If you don't tell people and invite them to your party, or tell them, by the way, you're invited, then they won't. And I see that to be one of the biggest problems that I see with a lot of people's marketing materials that's out, especially on the web. Just because people go to your site doesn't mean they're going to do anything. They might go there and visit, but if they leave without taking any kind of action whatsoever, who's to say that they're going to come back? And many times, they don't. And anybody who does web statistics probably can tell who comes back. So,
well, the messaging needs to be ongoing, right? I mean, you need to constantly reinforce it.
Yeah, it's not just on your website. I mean, you need to be able to follow up. I mean, you have to have follow-up mechanisms constantly. You know, like I have a website, I have a blog, I'm active in forums, and my message is the same. You know, I go to where my prospects or my ideal clients are, and my message is the same everywhere you go. And so by the time that they're really ready to take real action, which is to use my service, or then by then I don't even have to really sell very much. And that's a big problem, is if your message isn't consistent, you have to keep convincing people why they should, you know, either buy your product or your service. And things you don't want to be in that position of having to justify what you do. If they don't see the value of what you do, then your message is off. People need to see the value of what you do.
For those of you that are just walking in, we just want to make sure that everybody knows we're actually going to take questions throughout the presentation, so don't be shy. Get up and ask us questions, or we'll start asking you some.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And I just wanted to just put in something here, is that in everything you do, everything you write, everything you put out, you're always giving off, and we're talking about attracting your ideal client, you're giving off signals about who you will accept, who you want your client to be.
All right, we have our first question.
Question.
Yeah, my name is Sean Amirati. I'm from MSpoke. My question is taking a little bit of from the other side, but I'd be curious your perspective on the panel. So, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to find the right consultants to work with, and I'll say that it's really difficult often to do it just via Google searches or things like that. And just to give an example, like right now we're trying to find people with really specific skill sets around JavaScript programming as consultants, and it's hard to find the right people to do that. So I'm curious what creative ways people have found your services, and besides for just kind of stumbling upon you.
How do they find my services?
Yeah.
I used to be a search engine optimizer for Dell Computers, and I am really high in the ranks for my keyword set, small business marketing coach.
Right.
And that is really what I think is my keyword set. So that's how they find me. Now, I would think that in your business, you might have a lot of keywords like PHP and HTML.
Well, I mean, we don't do that. We're just looking for people to help us do that. We sell software for personalization, but we just need, there's places where we need help. And I guess the thing is, for what it's worth, I haven't found Google searches to help that well with a lot of the different consultants we've been looking to engage with. So are there other ways people have found you that you found effective? Or
I'm all over the place because I'm a marketer, and but you know, you could probably even post something on Craigslist. You might get a ton of, you know, people that are not qualified, but
right. That
may be one place to look. Where else do you, I mean,
I'm not sure.
Well, you have
but,
to go
you
know, with go, the forums, I would think. You know, places where these guys are hanging out and you know, actively participating in conversation about their craft.
Yeah.
That's where I would suggest probably a good place to start. You know, figure out where those places are and you know, start, you know.
You go to where they are.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's how you ask how people find me. I go to seminars where other people who are in roughly the same field are.
Right.
And you only have to go to a couple of those a year and get enough, you know, clients for, you know, forever.
Yeah, Yahoo groups are great places to look.
That's good. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Sure. Thanks for the question.
Another question?
Hi, my name is BJ O'Shea, and I'm a musician. And what do you do when you find that you have two target markets? For instance, in my music, I find that my music appeals to the coffee house, you know, mid-20s people, but it also appeals to geriatric women that are like my grandmother. So, you know, do I choose one or the other, or do I do two separate pushes? And she turned around, you're going to like my music, ma'am. And no offense.
I don't want to steal all the questions, but I I market to realtors in particular, and I also market to lawyers. And those are really two defined target markets. And then I also do my internet marketing for small business, which is a bigger scope. And sometimes I, you know, get people that aren't necessarily my target market. But my realtors, what I do is I found some of the top national trade magazines, and I've marketed to them. And I write in a way that it sounds like I'm talking directly to them. So in my case, yeah, I've got several niche markets, but when I actually market my services to them, I only talk to them in that way.
Yeah, that's something that you can do. What we call this is segmentation. What you do is you have a whole list of clients, and you segment them into different segments, and then you create, like I was talking about, a message to those segments only. So you're not trying to, the thing about what screws, messes up a lot of people in marketing is that they try to be all things.
No, it's okay. It screws it up.
Okay. Darn it, I'm cursing. But
darn it?
They try to be
all things. South by Southwest, for Christ's sake.
No.
You can throw a couple of goddammits in there if you want.
I thought I saw some kids running around with crayons downstairs. But the thing is, You run a business. You're not a politician. You don't need to be all things to all people. You need to be everything to the people that you want. So one of the things that really screws people up is they say, well, I got this market, I got that one. So I kind of create this kind of squishy message that kind of hits on both of them a little bit and find out that you don't get much of anything. But by kind of dividing and creating very targeted messages to that segment, then you're going to get much better results from your marketing.
Thank you.
So. You want to go on to the next one?
Yeah, well, I'll finish. I'm glad she said that, because that was the end of message, was that, you know, the message that you give off will determine the kind of clients that you get. And one example I was gonna say is that I was looking at a website the other day, and they were saying how they were... the message there begins, we are 50% cheaper than our closest competition. Well, I don't know what kind of clients are going to get from that, but a lot of cheapskates and people don't want to spend any money, people that don't even understand the value of what, I don't want to name this site, but...
oh, come on, tell us.
No, I'm not going to do it. But just using that word, cheaper, you know, they could have changed it to say, we offer... you know, 50% more value at, you know, X amount, you know, lower price. You put the emphasis on value, then people who understand value will start to go there, as opposed to people who, when price is front and center, people who are very price conscious start lining up. And I know most of us in business, we really don't want people that are very price conscious, because they tend to return things a lot, and they tend to not really want to stay customers for a long time, because that's what we're in business for. We're not in business to have one transaction. We bring people in for one transaction, but we want them to be customers for life. We don't want them just to be, you know, thank you very much, and that's it. So I guess...
Yeah, that's a great segue into the next point, which is exclusion.
Yeah, I don't mean to ramble here, but, you know, the... the funny thing, and this is something that most of my clients get very uncomfortable with, is when I say, when you're looking for your target market, you have to exclude a whole bunch of other people. And they'll say, but I could be getting this business. But I think the guy from, what was the guy from Zappos today?
Yeah.
I went to one of his panels, and he was talking that they had made a business decision which basically cut off 25% of their revenue. And basically, we have to make those decisions to say, this is who we want, but we don't want you. And don't be apologetic about it. You know, say, I wrote one time on one of my websites, I would say, you know, copywriting is a valuable service, and if you're looking for somebody who wants to work for peanuts, then get off my site right away and just go find somebody else. And everybody that called me, not many people were complaining about price too much, because even though, yeah, there are some people that would have been good, you know, you don't want the hassles. You have to know who you want and know that I don't want that other group. And one story that I know from one of my clients was that he was selling a course that he was selling to kind of entrepreneurs. And he was having an exceptionally high refund rate. I mean, ungodly high. I think about 45% were returning this thing. Oh, his response rates were great. I mean, people were responding well, but they kept returning it. And he didn't know why. And what we did was I just inserted a little paragraph in there that said, yes, I'm offering this free for 30 days. Good offer, by the way. So he got lots of response. People like free for 30 days. But it said, just kind of a summary, was it is free for 30 days. But if your intention with this product is to sit there, stare at it all day, and never take action with it, you need to take your money and go buy lottery tickets. Because that's exactly what you're doing. If you're not going to take action with this, don't even bother. Well, his response went down quite a lot, but his refund rate went down to 2%, and he made a lot more money because he was telling people, the message he sent was, I want people who are serious. I want people who take action. I don't want people who just think it's a neat thing and want to look. And by excluding that whole group of people, he was able to ultimately be successful with the product.
How many people are actually in startup mode right now, like in the valley of death, desperate for customers? So is that it's hard to walk away from business, obviously, but that's something that I think is a very valuable point to point out, is you've gotta play for the dollars. You gotta play for the customers that are gonna value your service, value what you bring to the table, and are actually gonna be the customers that you want for life. And I see a lot of startups that make the mistake of just going after just about everybody because they're desperate for cash flow, and I understand and appreciate that myself. But you've got to kind of concentrate on customers that you're focused on at the time that are going to zap your time, your energy, and actually your dollars. You know, they could be taking away from your true customer. And so I think it's important, just like with your target, you have to know where the boundaries are from an exclusion perspective.
This, we talked about the 80-20 rule I didn't mention, but I mean, when you're going after everybody, you will spend about 80% of your time dealing with these 20. People that you just shouldn't even be dealing with them. They'll take all your time, and they take out a lot of your money.
They take away your focus, too.
They do.
Right. So you might as well work with the people that you want to work with and leave the rest behind. In many sales letters, they'll also say, if you're not interested in increasing your sales 37%, then you don't need to read any more of this letter. And, you know, that's another way. It's a pre-qualifier. It's great. You know, it's attractive because we're like, I want to make 37 more.
Yeah, and those that don't, well, they stop reading the letter and they move on.
Right.
You know, they're not interested. I mean, why even bother?
Right.
Plus, they're looking for the quick fix, so they're not going to invest the time to read the rest of the letter anyway, so you're in good shape.
Yeah.
So, do we have any more questions?
Oh, great.
Talking about pricing, if you have a product or a service that's like a subscription-based thing, and you've made the mistake of underpricing your product, how would you suggest going about increasing it without like alienating all your existing customers?
Oh, that's his.
Well,
I'll answer that. My suggestion.
What's that? I didn't hear the question very well.
Can you repeat that?
Repeat that one more time. Sorry.
Yeah, the question was: if I have a service that's a subscription-based service, so people pay per the year, and if you've already kind of made the mistake of underpricing your product, how do you, kind of fix that without alienating your existing customers who've already paid, the lower price? The next year they come, and your price is, increased by however much.
I think personally the best approach is honesty with your customers. Hopefully you've got a service or a product that's worth what they've paid for, and that your price that you take them upstream to is going to be worth it as well. I think the best approach is to address it head on, call the pink elephant out in the room and say, look, this was an initial price, or, we woefully underestimated demand, and, by the nature of our business, we have to increase it to X. What do you guys think?
There's a woman on the internet that started with an ebook and charged $37 for it, and she actually got a lot of flack for it. Her mom goes, "Nobody's going to pay $37 for an ebook that, isn't even real." And now she sells that same ebook. I mean, she's made a couple additions to it. She said it's all of like 10 pages more, and she sells it for $499. So, and she's told her client base, well, I've just realized that this is offering my clients so much value that, you know, they're attracting so many more clients. And, you know, if you just attract one more client by using some of my ideas in this book, which almost everybody does. And, you know, she made a little bit of a sales pitch, of course. But yeah, you just have to tell them, well, wow, we've realized that this is of so much value. Now you have to, if you have a subscription base, you'll have to, you know, offer that original commitment. So you can't just change it in the middle.
Actually, I worked with a client very almost the exact same problem that you had, severely underpriced it. And what ended up happening, too, was the types of people subscribing. I mean, there was a certain kind of profile, and they were constantly complaining. But one thing that she did when she raised the price was basically demonstrating the value of what you're getting. And then when you do that, when you can demonstrate the value, and I don't know what your business or service is, but what you can do is try to put in numbers as much as you can, either if it saves them time, if it saves them money. Always be putting numbers up there. Demonstrate to them the value of what they're getting. And then you have to explain. And by the way, that's why that's why I have to increase this. And then you, depending on what that new pricing point is, you will get people who will, you know, you honor it for their subscription term. But there were some people who would drop out and say, you know, I was there because it was cheap. And the thing is a lot of times you can, with that client, 50% of the people dropped, but she made 100% more because of the price increase. So you have to kind of work the numbers to see which one is coming. You will get people that will drop. So just demonstrate the value of what it is.
Hi, I'm Amy Looper with Mindo, and I was wondering if I could show you this mini site that I have for a product, because I have a couple questions about squeezing for names, if that's still something that's being done in the online direct response process, because I see your mini site. I have a page just like that on the back end of my mini site, but we're squeezing up front for names
right
through the Mark Victor Hansen, Robert G.
Sure.
Allen format. And you're talking some stuff because I've seen Dan
right.
Kennedy talk many, many times. So I think we maybe have had some background and experiences.
Do you want us to look at that site now?
Yeah, if you don't.
If you don't know what a squeeze page is, which he was just talking about, what that is when you go to a site, it says, you know, for more information, put in your name and email address, and they get your name and email address up front, and then they take you to the main site. They call it a squeeze page. That's one thing a lot of marketers use to pre-qualify. They figure if you're not interested enough to give me your name and email address, you're probably not going to be interested in my product.
Yeah,
I do have another method that I don't use that method, by the way, anymore. I use a different method.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you guys, because this hasn't been as successful when we started it last year. I've kind of fallen off with using it, but now that you guys are talking about that makes me really even more excited to hear what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, let me just say this. I mean, I don't know.
Your site is down.
Who's big? That's even worse.
The first rule of marketing, make sure your site is up. No.
Let me just say something.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just validate this real quick before you go. Is it the Mind O Hat Home Series?
No, it's the Mind O at Home Series.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's kind of a hard domain to...
It is. That wasn't my first choice. But in this process, because we would affiliate with a pre-existing list, that link would be sent out. Now, see, that's a question. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because coming from my background, I would have gone with a very simple URL. But the methodology that we were learning through these classes with some of the people that you guys have studied, they were like, well, you know, the URL doesn't matter because you're going to be an affiliate with somebody. So, for example, Joe Vitale sent a letter out to his huge list with this link in it. So, you know, I've been trying to use that methodology. So anyway, it's some things are working, some things aren't.
I understand that, you know, we are obviously studying from the same people. Yes.
Sure. My question?
What is your question?
Well, it's about, if you look at the site just real quick, because I'm squeezing for a name, my question is about, is it still appropriate to squeeze for names these days? Because what the site, if we can get it up, is a year old. And I noticed that your site, if you come right to that page, you're not squeezing for names, are you?
My site?
I'm sorry, yes,
no,
I'm sorry.
Mine, I'm not necessarily squeezing for names. Okay. I have an opt-in box right at the beginning. This is actually I have a system that I sell, this laws of attraction system.
Okay.
So what I say in the beginning is, great, thanks for coming. You know, if you'd like my first chapter of my ebook, then go ahead and put your first name here and you'll go ahead and grab my first chapter of my ebook.
Okay.
And if not, if you know that you would like my product already, scroll to the bottom of the page and you can finish the transaction.
Okay.
So this isn't a squeeze. Now I can show you a squeeze page.
Since you're mentioning that, you know, when we talk about Web 2.0, the strategies are getting different now. Used to be when you market online, you know, you squeeze for names, you get them on your mailing list, and then you send them an email every day until they buy or die. But what I have found out in marketing tests is this is not working well anymore. What I have been using that I found to be more successful is called a reverse opt-in. What I do is I just give you the content. You know, I critique videos critique videos of people's websites showing them how to, you know, how they can increase their conversion. I do is I give them one of the videos and say, here's the video, have a look at it, enjoy it, you're going to learn a whole lot of stuff from it. If you'd like to see more of my videos, put in your name and email address. We call that the reverse opt-in. You do get more if you try to squeeze them, but you get a lot of people unsubscribing from your list. So it's just not working anymore. I mean, there's too much. People can get too much for free these days, and the relationship. I mean, you're squeezing someone's arm. You're twisting their arm behind their back to basically get your sales pitch, and it's just not working anymore. And I don't recommend that to anybody anymore.
Well, that makes sense.
You really have.
I appreciate it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, I don't want to take any more time.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, we can't get your side up.
You really have to do both. I don't think that it's the death of the e-zine yet, but you really do have to do both. You have to get your message out in multiple different ways. And I have a podcast as well as my regular site, as well as my site where I get the opt-ins and different things like that. Yeah. So you really have to do everything to get them on your list.
We have another question.
Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is a great panel.
Thanks.
I run a live online astronomical observatory. It's the only thing out there like it. And we've been up for 3 years, and the initial newness of the ability to have professional research tools in this GUI, easy-to-use interface for all the people with telescopes in their closet, the initial press, initial newness got us the membership that sustains us today and keeps us alive. Now I am in the process of defining who exactly we want now, who our membership is now. So I've been looking at, again, we don't have a big budget. I'm PR and marketing. I'm chief operator. We all do everything. I've seen things like SurveyMonkey, kind of budget tips to figure out who these people are, and then how do you get people to actually fill out these surveys? Do you offer them something, or do you have any tips about figure out who this person is and then market to them directly?
Oftentimes, to get people to do surveys like that, you have to, one, you give them something for free, and maybe even before that, you have to have a pretty good list that likes, knows, and trusts you. People don't like to take surveys unless they have a relationship with the person already. Mm-hmm. That's kind of unfortunate, but it's true.
Is there anything besides SurveyMonkey out there? It's the only one I've heard of.
Yeah, you can use SurveyMonkey is good. There's also something called the Ask Database.
That's good.
If you go to my site up there, if you go to my Delicious, I tag all my internet marketing tools. You can just look at pretty much everything I use. And SurveyMonkey is good, but if you don't pay $19.95, it's for free, but you only get 100 responses. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how big your list is.
Ask we database, have about 30,000 on the list. So, you know,
Ask database is pretty good because it does keyword. It has a keyword density tool, so you can read the responses. But when you run the keyword density tool, it's like a search engine basically. So it picks out keywords that people keep repeating, and you kind of catch some things that you wouldn't have caught before. And that's Ask database.
Well, that was pretty good. Carla and I just did a teleseminar, and we actually were able to craft a good majority of the content specific to how people answered, you know, gave us answers to this one question, and it was an incredibly useful tool.
Great, thank you.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment on the squeeze page. It seems to me that the concept of a squeeze page is like an opt-out automatically by default, and that doesn't seem to go for your ideal client. So ideally, you'd want to do an opt-in sort of thing. So you give the person the content. They're already interested. Mm-hmm. They opt into your site. So that would be your ideal client, somebody that's already interested in what you have, as opposed to the shotgun approach, which is take everybody that comes to the site and then filter out the ones you don't like.
Well, you have to think that you've already pre-qualified them by the time they get to your site. People aren't just wandering in that are who knows where. Many times to get people to my site, I've written articles, and if people align with that article, then they go to my site and opt in too. So, same with my keyword set. They've searched for me. They've searched for a keyword set that I've tried to optimize.
So
it's not just everybody. But I see your point.
So you've done like a
teaser. You might want to comment on it.
No, I mean, I agree if I'm getting your point. I mean, by giving for me, it's the way it is. I give them the content first. Those that opt in after I did a test on this, so I split test this out. So this is not my opinion. What I found out was the rates were fairly equal, but the people who opted in after I gave them the content first, they didn't opt out.
Right.
And they were much more receptive to offers I was making. And I think, in a sense, they were my ideal clients because they already had bought into what I was saying. Those that believe in the message that I'm giving and in the vision I have, they are my ideal clients. So they've made that choice to say, yes, I believe what you're saying, and I want you to send me more information. They give me their permission. I didn't have to squeeze their arm for it. If they don't want to be on my list, don't get on my list.
Right.
So,
cool. Yeah. Thanks.
Hello. I've enjoyed the panel, and I have a question about lead generation. I've been selling consulting services in what I think is a niche within a niche within a niche. So it's open source content management systems, and in particular one called Plone. And lately I've been, within the last few months, I've been getting a lot of leads, like 2 to 3 a week. And I'm the only employee in my company. I work with a lot of subcontractors. It's a virtual team. And I'm finding it increasingly difficult to keep up with all these leads. They're coming in, and I have a hard time qualifying them because it usually requires calling them up, talking to them on the phone. And I'm spending a lot more time just following up on leads than I am actually doing real work. And so I'm wondering if I'm specializing enough. Like, maybe the website could sort of filter out some of those leads so that I'm getting more qualified leads. And I'm just wondering if you guys have ideas about how to handle leads coming in.
I can help you with that.
And just one other point. because it's a small community, I work with a lot of other partners. We all kind of know each other. All the Plone community people work together. So I would like to have some way of converting these leads so that even if I don't have the time and resources to take them on, I could pass them on to other people in the community and kind of share the love. So I'm wondering if you have some ideas about how to keep the leads in the community. This is an open source community, so a way of passing them on for minimal effort on my part.
Right. So I had a business before, and I was coaching 31 clients a week, and I was getting leads while I was on the phone. You know, people were calling me, asking me for my services, and I got overwhelmed and really confused. So I actually set up a system to deal with these people. So this is one answer. There's actually two answers, because you may be able to pre-qualify them first. But the first answer is, these days, I bring in everyone, and if they want to talk with me, I say, well, you have to pay me $97 for my breakthrough session. I don't let them just yap my ear off on the phone. I do offer a 15-minute get acquainted session for those people that have just a few questions for me, but I really make sure that that just stays to 15 minutes. So anybody that thinks they might want to work with me, it's just $97.
What do you ask them in those first 15 minutes to know whether they're a good client or not?
Say that again.
What do you ask them in those first 15 minutes to find out whether they would be a good client or not?
I will ask them what they're really looking to do on the internet. Most clients that come to me today are consultants that want to make their business really work online. And, within those 15 minutes, they usually have questions for me more than anything else. I don't ever try to actually close the deal. I really do kind of more a soft sale. You come to me, you figure out from my information on the online if I'm right for you. I've got, plenty of websites for you to research and figure out if I'm right for you. So that's how I do it these days. Now, you may want to pre-qualify beforehand. I don't know what your systems of lead generation, but you may want to be able to ask them, when do you need the solution or something like that? A when question.
I usually ask when and how much they have to spend and what their time frame is.
Okay.
And if they can't answer those two questions, it's often very difficult for me to continue with them. Like I said, it's right. More of like a soft sale.
Right. Yeah. And then you may want to get an assistant to handle that.
Yeah, I've been thinking about doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be the best bet. All right. Well, we're running out of time.
We have another question.
One more question.
Thanks for your question.
Thank you.
I wanted to make sure there wasn't anyone behind me, because I've already asked one. Anyhow, first I wanted to say, ma'am, I don't think you're geriatric. I just think you'd like my music. And second... Yes, I really did not mean to insult you because I realized, you don't tell someone.
There's going to be a cat fight at our panel.
I know. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. No, I know you'd like it. Anyhow, how do you if he has a question, go ahead. I've already asked one. Let him.
He said, what's our fifth point?
Actually, we should.
Okay.
Just real quickly. We'll just cover
it. I'll ask afterwards. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Our fifth point is basically turn your customers, the customers that you most want, make them your evangelists. Make them your best sales force. We focus a lot of time and energy on going out and targeting the right kinds of customers and spending our time on trying to attract the customers we want. But you want to focus your time and energy on making sure that you're providing exceptional value, being the best possible resource that you can to those people that you're serving. And what I have always found in business is geese of a feather flock together. So you have particular high-end clients, for example, who have high-end other colleagues that they run with. And ideally, those types of people will help grow your business. But it doesn't happen without you actually taking an active role in encouraging them to do that. And I'm not talking about just referral. I'm talking about that, having a relationship with your client that is such that they want to sing your praises, whatever it is that you do. When they hear it at a cocktail party or they hear it, to Starbucks or whatever, they go, oh, you've got to see Jen without question because she has done so much for my business. They are your walking billboard. And you really have to seed that with, encouraging them to always be on the lookout for business for you in that capacity because, I see a lot of people that have referral strategies, but they don't necessarily, they're talking about referrals, but they're not necessarily getting their customers excited about helping refer business to them. But I know you guys are really good at that.
Yeah. Well, Steve is the best at it. We were actually at a networking event last night, and he knew several people, and he would actually come and say, this woman is the guru of eBay, and this woman is, the guru of internet marketing. And he connected us just by, he's really good at making us feel really good about ourselves.
Yeah, I want to, when you think about your clients, think about it like this. You don't get the customer to make the sale. You make the sale to get the customer. Because once you don't think about your customers as transactions. You want them to be your clients for life. So when you got them in, once they're your customers, you take care of them. You do for them. You actually help them grow. You take an interest in their success because that's what everyone's in business for, is to make other people successful. And when you do that, people will just out of the blue say, I've had people calling me that from like a seminar I went to like 3 years ago, referring me to some other guy, and I was really happy with that. And so that's what happens when you take care of your customers.
Do you want to come back up and ask your question?
We have a few more minutes. Anybody?
Are you still here?
The deads.
We got one.
All right, I'll ask something. So this conference, I guess, is about 10 years too late because 10 years ago when we started, I'm VP of marketing and biz dev at a web design company. And 10 years ago when, you know, you're starting off, you take what you can get. So we took a lot of clients that, you know, were not the greatest clients in the world, but were really, you know, were crazy about client services. So these clients are still with us. Now we're big enough that I can pick and choose and have really good clients, but I'm stuck with my bad clients. How do I get rid of them?
Tell them to go away.
Yeah, fire them.
You know, it's the same thing as, you know, you're underpricing. I mean, you have to be honest with them. They're just, you know, your business has grown to a point that it's just not feasible for you to support them any longer. I mean, that's probably not a popular statement, but I had the same thing in one of my other ventures. I just had to finally get rid of the customers that were just dragging us down, because at some juncture, you're spending far too much time, far too much effort and dollars to maintain the relationship with them. And so Carlin's big at firing. He likes to play Donald Trump.
Yeah, oftentimes you can just say your values don't line up with my values, or, you know.
Find them a lower cost alternative.
Call Carlin. He'll take care of them.
We're
the bad client assassinators.
No, it's really good. If it's all about price, you know, if you can find them a lower cost alternative, if that's what they want.
Yeah, an alternative is good.
Say, here you go. There's a cheaper person for you that might be more in tune with what you want. So.
Okay, I know they're going to kick us off stage, but can we ask this question just real quick?
How do you determine how much you give away? I mean, do you you say you give away a first chapter of a book? You know, where do you draw the line of, I've just given away everything. They don't want to buy anymore. You know?
I don't ever. We usually say it's the what and the why, but not the how.